We're specifically talking about the guilt that people may feel when they are successful or where they may be more financially successful than others in their life. Mm-hmm. And it brings me to thinking about when I first started sharing my thoughts about money online and kind of sharing some of the things that I was learning. And one of the primary reasons I decided to do that and to break that social taboo is because I knew so many people who were withholding valuable insight and information because they felt guilty for like sharing some of their successes and how they got to where they are.
Right.
And it was just like a really, really tough thing to see. And I was like, didn't understand it. And I like, hated it at first. And then I started to deal with mm-hmm. that same thing.
It started that to always works.
It started to show up in my life. Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. And today, in the spirit of awkward Thanksgiving dinners,
oh boy,
we're going to unpack success guilt.
Yeah, I feel like I already need a sangria and like a moment alone on the patio away from this conversation.
Why?
This is, this is a serious issue. It's something personally that I've struggled with my entire adult life. So I actually am looking forward to this conversation. I want to hear your thoughts on it. And hopefully in the process of exchanging some of our thoughts, we're helping others who are listening who may be struggling with this as well.
Yeah, we're really on this like exploration of feelings.
Yeah,
here at the Christian Regular Podcast. Yeah. Last week we talked about debt shame, and now we're talking about success guilt. And I'm excited to like dig in. Although I'm not gonna lie, I don't think I've ever really struggled with success guilt.
Mm.
Survivor's guilt, yes. Imposter syndrome, for sure.
Yeah.
But I've never really felt bad about leaving the pack, so to say.
Yeah, I definitely have. And I want to jump right into it because this can be a pretty long conversation, but hopefully not. Hopefully we can just dive in and get right to it. But let's start with just defining it. And so we call it success guilt, but that's not like a formal term or a psychological term. So if there are any psychologists out there, you know, we're not sort of encroaching on your territory. This is just what we call it. It's just guilt that is derived from one's success. In this case, because we're talking about money and that's what the heart of this podcast is about, we're specifically talking about the guilt that people may feel when they are successful or where they may be more financially successful than others in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings me to thinking about when I first started sharing my thoughts about money online and kind of sharing some of the things that I was learning. And one of the primary reasons I decided to do that and to break that social taboo is because I knew so many people who were withholding valuable insight and information because they felt guilty for like sharing some of their successes and how they got to where they are.
Right.
And it was just like a really, really tough thing to see. And I was like, didn't understand it. And I like hated it at first. And then I started to deal with mm-hmm. that same thing.
It started that to always works.
It started to show up in my life. And so
yeah.
You remember, it was shortly after we met when I got a job, and my role was I was responsible for, we used to work for a hotel company, and I was responsible for resorts. And so whenever I would travel on business, naturally, I would be spending a lot of time at resorts. And I'm sure that there are listeners that are like, oh, great, rolling their eyes.
I'm over here rolling my eyes.
That like, is the same
yeah.
feeling.
I remember your resort job.
You know, but
poolside check-in.
It's my job. Somebody's got to do it. But no, like that's exactly the vibe that I would get from people. I would go there and I'd go to these places where I otherwise would not have gone. And I would share and send pictures and say, hey, like, this is pretty cool. Beautiful views. Like, hey, bet you didn't know North Carolina could mm-hmm. be so beautiful. Bet you didn't know, you know, and I would just do that pretty regularly. And after a while, I think people got a little annoyed. They're like, do you ever work? And I'm like, this is work. I'm kind of doing my job. I'm just kind of showing you what's here and actually hoping to drum up business. But yeah, like hearing the must be nice
yeah.
and the, you know, that sort of started to cut through because, you know, made it seem as if I was boasting and, you know, I kind of felt bad about it.
Well, you know, now that you say that, I wonder if I may have inadvertently triggered somebody else's success guilt because in the past, I've definitely been one of those must be nice kind of people because I have friends that are in very cool industries like entertainment and sports. But like you said, now that people do it to me, I'm just like, no, this is actually like you're seeing 20% of what is. Yeah, like this is actually a lot of work.
This is literally the one cool moment that I've had.
I know.
People don't understand that. I would go to these resorts and I'm like, you don't understand. I'm inside.
Yeah.
Like it sucks. I'm going to resort destinations and spending my time in an office and like in
a windowless cubicle. A window.
Exactly.
But I think what you're describing is very, very real, because even though I haven't literally experienced it, or at least I can't think of an example where I've literally experienced it, I have talked to several business owners who are even struggling with a special kind of success guilt that's been driven by the pandemic. So in the midst of so many small businesses that are being shuttered and, you know, struggling with understaffing, one of my best friends has her own company that does events in Alabama. And one of her clients is one of the big football teams there. And so she's been really, really busy and thriving. And she often feels like she has to downplay her achievements or, you know, lean into more heavily about the parts of the businesses that aren't going well.
Yeah.
Whenever she's talking about, you know, whenever she's networking with other colleagues from different industries or even her family members that are struggling to find employment, like she just doesn't feel like she has that outlet to talk about the one cool thing that happened or the new, you know, business that she's just won.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. And that's very real, right? There are some businesses and some entrepreneurs who've actually been able to, like, fundamentally change their lives and their financial picture because of the pandemic. It's not to say you're grateful for it, but it did present opportunities for some.
Yeah.
And so I can totally...
Make some soap or some antibacterial.
There were a lot of people.
Cleaning businesses. A lot of people are thriving right now.
Arbitrage. It was a huge, huge opportunity. So, you know, for me, as I think about it, I think specifically about people that I grew up with. And I think that's part of the struggle, is because I can envision growing up in Brooklyn, New York, and kind of having the same starting point as a lot of these people. And we've kept in touch over the years, but they're not, you know, having nearly as much success as I am, at this point in my life. And it's a very similar feeling with, you know, people that I went to high school with, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's kind of like, oh, we were all here at the same time. We were all in the gym listening to this person talk and try to motivate us, but not everyone was as fortunate or as lucky as I was. And I know that some people work harder than others. Some people have access, but it still kind of stings sometimes. And so even when we just talk about money or wealth building just in general, it's uncomfortable. And so as much as I'd like to be open and share all the details, I'm kind of like your friend. Like, I'm not entirely confident that it will be well received.
Right.
And what's really crazy is if you'd have asked me 10 years ago, 15 or 20 years ago, what I thought, like, the fear of being outspoken about money would have been, I would have said that, like, you would basically be opening up the doors or the floodgates for people to ask you for money. Mm-hmm. But that's not been the case at all.
Right.
Like, in fact, the biggest struggle has been, like, just flat out avoidance. Like, people who... You know, they're not just going to come out and say, hey, I don't like hanging out with you because I don't really feel good about myself when I'm around you. They just kind of stop showing up. They stop reaching out. They just kind of, it's like that Homer Simpson meme.
Yeah.
You know, they just kind of fade into the bushes. They disappear. And it's like, hey, it's been a while. They didn't respond to my text. They didn't show up to the party. It's been really tough to deal with. And that's in part why we decided to go public the way that we did with our platform and our blog at first, and to not be anonymous, because we wanted to live and lead by example. We wanted to inspire others to manage money more responsibly and to make the process of growth, whether it be financial growth or entrepreneurial growth or whatever your sort of personal development desires are, a little less lonely and, like, less guilty.
Yeah, it really is a catch-22. It's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of things.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a first-generation wealth builder for your family. Like, if you were on the other side of success and still struggling, you would feel guilty about not doing more.
Right.
But because you don't worry about certain things, now you feel guilty about having too much.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad, because it just kind of dilutes the desire to keep trying. Whenever you achieve something meaningful or fun, you got this little voice in the back of your head asking, like, oh, how long do I have before the guilt sets in? It's like you're just trying to rush through it instead of being present and really enjoying the moment.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, I love to try to see if I'm the only person in the world that's feeling this way. This is where the internet comes in pretty handy. And so I found an article on the guilt for success, and the writer theorized that there may be like a genetic justification for why we or people who feel guilt for their success may feel that way. Mm-hmm. And basically they're saying that like we're biologically conditioned to be like in a pack. So, yes. You know, that could be like our family or our friend circle or like a mix of both, but like we're wired. And so now it's sort of a natural instinct for us to kind of be together and travel together and experience all of these things together. And so when you or someone sort of in that pack has the desire to leave mm-hmm. Or move on to bigger and better things or explore things that may not necessarily be familiar to the pack, there's a tendency to feel like it's an act of disloyalty or betrayal, or that you're not sort of grateful for the bond that you've shared or created even with those people. And so naturally, when you talk about a pack, it makes me think of a wolf pack.
Oh, I thought you were going to say hangover.
Well,
the infamous toast yes. about the wolf pack.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, there'll be no.
I clearly just want a drink.
But, you know, it made me think of a wolf pack, like an actual wolf pack, not mm-hmm. like a bachelor party in Vegas. But just thinking about that made me think about groupthink, which isn't really a good thing either. Because I was like, all right, you know, to some degree, you know, we all like to think that we are free thinkers. But, you know, I don't think anyone can flat out really say that. I think to some degree, we all have beliefs that have been ingrained in us from a parent, a guardian, our environment or a mentor. But, you know, this is why navigating this emotion is so difficult, because it feels like there's no clear right answer. If you stay in your pack, you don't feel like you're being true to yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you strike out on your own, you don't feel like you're being true to your pack or your family or the culture or whatever it is that you are kind of bonded to.
I'm so glad you brought this up and found that article, because you're absolutely right. The pressure to relate to your friends and family is more than just a matter of like personal preference. It's truly an evolutionary trait.
Yeah.
And you know, I love history and random facts, but one of the earliest signs of human civilization was actually the discovery of a bone that had been broken and then healed. Mm. You'd think it'd be some sort of artifact, like the earliest discovery of human civilization would be this bowl or a spoon or something. But they knew it was a sign of humanity, because if an animal had broken their leg, it would have just been left on their own to die and become roadkill.
Yeah.
Well, not roadkill. I guess there weren't cars back then. But it would have just been left to die on their own. But the healing was actually evidence that someone took time to tend to the wounded, ensure they were safe and able to recover. And that is humanity. That's what distinguishes us from the animal kingdom.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, our brains are still very primitive and haven't evolved nearly as fast as society unless you've actively tried to train your brain. And so our primitive brains still trick us into thinking that our survival is at stake and that social acceptance is a life or death matter. You cannot leave the pack or you're not safe.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's very much a real thing. And it's actually a bit of a relief for me to hear that, because it's like, it's not like you're struggling with something. Like it could just be, you know, instinctual.
Yeah, right? It's just
like
your brain.
It's a natural instinct telling you like, no, you know, it's sort of manifesting maybe in guilt, but it's really about like, this is sort of a primary feeling that you are getting whenever you are sort of rising and you feel lonelier and you don't have a pack anymore because they're over there and you're sort of at the top of this mountain or something. Anyway, so my personal experiences aside, you know, when I think about how this impacts other people, one of the biggest things that I see is, you know, this sort of guilt of success gets in the way of them sharing valuable lessons. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, if you're at a family gathering and you're the person that's doing well, there's always one or maybe a couple. You know, there's like a need in the family, or, you know, there's always like this kind of awkward dance, you know, for how this need is going to be fulfilled. And so it could be the notion that everyone's going to chip in a little bit, but you may just have the ability to just pay for the whole thing, but you kind of don't say anything, you know, because you're like, listen, $100 for you is very different than $100 for me. But then there's also the idea that if you were to kind of say that, you know, you might
showing off.
You're showing off. Yeah. You're like, you're doing a bit too much.
Or my money isn't good
Yeah.
enough or whatever.
And on the other hand, you may have some people who are kind of holding and waiting back and just kind of expecting you to make this problem go away
right.
because
you got
they
so
know
much money.
And understand that you have so much money.
Yeah.
And this like this weird mashup of like pride and guilt and what do I do? What do I say? You know, it's just so awkward.
Yeah. And it almost becomes like this act of theater, at least
oh, yeah.
at some tables. Well, in my family, there's a hoopla about who's going to pay the bill. And then one slick person kind of goes directly to the server
yeah.
behind everybody else and takes care of it. And there isn't any fussing because it's already done.
Yeah.
But it creates this tension for the next meeting where it's like, oh, last time you snuck to the waiter, I'm going to go this time. So
yeah.
it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But beyond just splitting the check, I agree that there is a great amount of wisdom that just doesn't get passed on or
yes.
spread because it's not a safe space to complain anymore. You know, we've talked about how people assume that life just gets magically easier once you hit a financial milestone. But the reality is exactly what Biggie was talking about. More money, more problems.
Yeah, different problems.
Or at least different types of problems.
Yeah.
Exactly. There are all sorts of lessons that can be gleaned from successful people, from networking and relationship building, tax optimization, crisis recovery, scaling businesses.
Having employees,
hiring and hiring,
absolutely.
And developing.
Yeah.
If we could all just get more comfortable and curious about the process instead of just intimidated around the result, which is their success.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a huge, huge issue, you know, for corporate employees, for entrepreneurs, for everyone, you know, even if we're not just talking about money, obviously that's the focus
right.
of this conversation. It could just be, you're the person who went to college. You're the
yeah.
person who has been out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
You're the person who's done, you know, anything that the pack simply hasn't done. There tends to be, for some people, a bit of a challenge in having to cope with the guilt with whatever it is that you've been able to accomplish or experience that other people may not have been. So
yeah.
I'm like already regretting asking this question, but like, how do we fix it? What
oh,
can
man.
We do? What are some tips?
It's a great question. And I'm going to take a stab at it right after we hear from our sponsors. Okay. So great question. What can people do about success guilt? And my first tip is actually to counteract the guilt by doing something for someone else that is impactful and significant.
Hmm.
And so my logic here is keep in mind that your brain is still a caveman, right? And when you're experiencing that fear of leaving the pack, you actually need to remind it that you're still part of a pack. Like it's not a life or death situation. You're part of the human pack, which sounds like slang for like hot dogs or something. You want a human pack?
Yeah.
Be a terrible gang name.
Yeah.
I'm the leader of the human pack. But my point is, like, it doesn't have to be a grand gesture, just something that reminds you that you're a good person who's worthy of all the good things that are happening to you. And it also helps to reinforce your reasons for becoming successful in the first place. If you're keenly aware of how many people you can help or have helped with either money or connections or whatever it is that you're successful in, it's a nice antidote against the little shady comment that you may hear at the dinner table.
Yeah.
You're reminded, this is why I'm doing this. I know exactly how many people I can help, and I know how many people I have helped because I'm in a position to do so.
Yeah, I like that because I'm a bit of a visual thinker at this point. And as you were speaking, I was kind of visualizing like my own experiences there. I think the other benefit of doing that is people are watching,
yeah.
whether it's adults or even teenagers who are sort of forming their own understanding and identity as a part of your family or Wolfpack. They're,
mm-hmm.
they're sort of seeing you lead. And in a way, you're setting the tone for, you know, hopefully what the future of your family could look like. My tip is a little different, and it's what I've learned just to, you know, in the process of kind of being myself and fighting through some of these awkward moments. But what I've learned is to get the awkward part out of the way early.
Oh, man, just rip the Band-Aid
yeah,
off.
Just rip it
right
off,
in.
Jump right in, get it out of the way. Rather, because I think most people, it's like they dance around it. They dance.
I definitely do.
They do laps and they come back around and then it's like, all right, let's get to it. Because the real question that everyone's going to have. So like, for example, the other night, I had a much needed guys' night. And so a friend of ours who's moved here a couple years ago, he was like, you know what? This is something we used to do. And it was just like steak night. So we went to like this really...
Sounds like a dude night.
It was very steak, night. Steak, scotch.
Oh, yeah.
It was like the...
Cigars.
Oh, yeah. It was all the things.
All dude.
All the things. It was a...
Although I do love steak and scotch.
It was great. It was a really nice... But it's expensive, right? Like yeah. steak nights, scotch and all that stuff. Like it's really, really expensive. And, you know, the people that we wanted there, not everyone is in the same financial position. Mm-hmm. But what we did to kind of help curb that is like, we still want you to be there, or at least make sure that we are making it very clear for you. It was like, all right, we're going to have this sort of steak night thing. And here's what we're going to do with the menu, right? We're just going to all eat family style and so that you can get
a better
idea of how much it's going to cost. And so whether or not we're talking about, you know, going out to dinner or like going to, I'm just making it up, Vegas, lead with how much it's going to cost. Because let's just be honest, I'm sure a lot of the people that are listening, I'm sure we've all been there where people start out, they all get excited, and then we all end up getting frustrated when half of the people fall out. And part of the reason is we all know is money. So just lead with the money so that we don't have to lure people in, or they don't even have to pretend. If you say, listen, we want to go to Vegas, this is when we're going, and this is where we want to stay, this is how much it's going to cost, someone can say right then and there, yeah, I ain't got it. There's no way I can do it, or I'm on a budget, or that conflicts with something else that I'm doing, and it gets it out of the way.
Yeah, I love that. I think positioning stuff as a surprise also helps to get things a little less awkward. So, of course, there'll always be people who are, you know, that say they hate surprises, but generally speaking, surprises are often met with delight. And so if you do want to do something nice for somebody, or you do want to cover it, you can just say, surprise. And hopefully that smooths things over.
That's not going to work for the guys' trip.
It's not
going to
work in Brooklyn.
Like, yeah. It's like, surprise, guys.
All right. I'm not saying every tip is a winner. I'm just saying consider it.
Yeah. I'll add surprise to my vocabulary.
All right. How's this one? This is a real tip. Another tip that I have is to actually visualize a successful interaction with people. I think when you've known someone for a long time and had several interactions over time, you start to assume that you know what they're going to say.
Yeah.
And if you have a brain like mine, you might even play out the argument in your head that never actually happened or isn't going to happen. You're just over there rehearsing your clapbacks and working yourself up for no reason because you know, at least you think you know, that somebody is going to like pop off whenever you announce this news. And so a prompt that I use to get like a really clean visual and to try to imagine a successful interaction that doesn't flood me with guilt is, if my goal wasn't to feel validated by their reaction, how would it change my experience?
Hmm.
Right? Because I think part of the reason that we share things with family members is, one, just to inform them. But there's also this little part of us, this subconscious part of us that wants to feel validated and supported and reinforced by this pack that loves us, accepted,
yeah,
right? And so I have to ask myself, if that wasn't my goal, how would that change my experience? Is this still someone that I would feel compelled to share this news that likely isn't related to their life, maybe a huge deal in my life, but if they're not an industry person, they don't care who I'm talking to or that I just had an interview with someone I'm excited about. Once I remove that expectation, I can really start to think of like more neutral topics to connect with them on.
Yeah.
And it might be movies, it might be a song, it might be a dance, it might be a game that I bring, but it makes me be more creative in the situation.
Yeah, I like that. Definitely.
Oh, so you like that one, but you don't like surprise.
Yeah, I do. Definitely.
Surprise.
Yeah. Well played. All right, my last tip is, and I'm sure a therapist or licensed therapist would completely disagree with this approach, but I think that there are some forms of avoidance that could be considered healthy. Mm. Like this healthy avoidance. There are some topics that are just third rails. And you just avoid them with certain people. And the reality is that there are just some people you just won't be able to convince or like avoid having tension with when it comes to money. And so just avoid it to preserve the larger relationship, right? You wait until that person goes to the bathroom to, you know, engage others, or you do whatever you have to do. But like you, it's about looking at the bigger picture, which is preserving the relationship and not sort of upsetting the vibe or the energy, especially if it's like over the holidays or something like that.
Right.
You know, I have a family member, you know, and I've just come to accept that we just aren't, they are not going to accept any recommendations or advice that had come from me. It's taken me a long time to just accept that, but like, it's fine. Like, you know, it's best for me to just let them do their thing. And to do what I always consider, like, leaving the door open. Like, if or when they come, like, I'm hoping they don't fall into hardships, but if they do sort of come, like, it's my job to kind of be whatever role it is that I am in the pack and to leave the door open and open them and to welcome them with open arms for help and support.
I'ma leave the door open. I'ma leave the door open.
It took me a couple notes to figure out what song you were saying. Because you went real high.
I did. I'm a little flat.
It was a little romantic. I'm a little... I was like, no, it was missing the funk.
Well, you know, I'm not Bruno.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry to those who don't know that song. You're really missing out. It's Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak. Leave the door open. All right. So going to your point around healthy avoidance, which I would normally be like, yeah, I don't know that that's a thing, but I actually have done that with Facebook and Instagram. And I'm mentioning it because I don't want people to just assume that this feeling isn't also triggered passively by our scrolling, right? Okay. Like you always assume that it's just a person that's doing it, but you can actually trigger it in yourself just by scrolling. Because you've heard the phrase that social media is a highlight reel. Yeah. I think that's how it goes. And that's because you're always seeing other people like being their best selves. It goes back to your resort job. It's like you're only posting the 20% that people right. are going to react to. You're not posting, you know, hunched over in coach class on the airport in a middle seat,
right.
building the deck on the way there.
Right.
Like, you're just posting the view from the pool. So I know I've muted quite a few people who are probably great parents, actually not probably, they're clearly great parents and great business people, but they trigger this comparison game in me and I start doubting where I'm headed in my own path.
That's very big of you to admit that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we jump into final thoughts?
All right. My final thought goes back to something you said briefly earlier when, you know, you were talking about how when people say things to you, they're actually just projecting an insecurity about themselves.
Okay.
I'm actually borrowing this from Martha Beck, who is this really famous life coach, like right up there with Tony Robbins in terms of like fame. But she teaches this concept called you spot it, you got it. And the idea is basically that if you see something in someone else, you're also seeing a quality that you have.
Hmm.
It can be negative. So when you're irritated with someone else, you're seeing something that you don't like about yourself. Or it can be positive where when you see something that you admire, you're seeing a quality that you have, but you may not be able to recognize it in yourself yet. Her point is that it's all a projection. Everybody is projecting onto everybody, and you should really use that as the starting point of your curiosity. So when you notice it, you can tell yourself that their reactions have very little to do with you and everything to do with how they feel about themselves.
Hmm.
You spot it, you got it.
I'm not going to lie. The first thing I thought was you smelt it, you dealt it.
Oh, yeah. It's similar.
Oh, okay.
I haven't said that in a while.
Yeah.
I need to start saying that because it's true like 80% of the time.
Oh, that's deep. Great final thought. all right. My final thought is actually bringing us back to a previous episode where we spoke about the role that shame played in personal finance. And so here we are today, kind of extending that conversation a little bit and talking a little bit more about guilt. We said in that podcast that the primary difference was that guilt was specific to a particular action that you did, whereas shame was a bit more all-encompassing. And so coping with guilt, especially with guilt from success, is really, really hard to deal with. But I've learned that you need to remind yourself of the good that you're doing more often and do that privately. Right? Don't publicly sort of get out there every single day and remind you the world of the good that you're doing, but remind yourself. And I think it's important that we do that. You know, think about the people who haven't had to bail you out and the people that you'll be able to help because of your success and all of the things that you've accomplished. So just do your best to remind yourself that you're a good person and let the few negative examples in your life sort of be, but don't let them overshadow the broader impact that you can have.
Oh, love that. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you want to avoid another version of success guilt, then head on over and give us 5 stars on the ratings and review page.
No shame.
Get it? Success Magazine, Success Guilt, Guilt About Not Giving Success Magazine 5 stars. It was like a triple entendre.
Yeah. It was pretty meta.
It was very meta. We will see y'all next week.